This is episode 415, dated Monday, November 3rd, 2025.
You are listening to Sports Roundtable.
Hello, everyone, and welcome once again to Sports Roundtable. I am Bob Branco. Great to be with all of you today. This is episode 415, dated Monday, November 3rd, 2025. Before we continue with our many sports topics that we have lined up today, let me introduce our panel members that we have here right now. We start out with Don Wardlow.
Say there, Bob, and hi to everybody from Jersey, where it's starting to get cold. It was supposed to rain today, but it didn't.
Well, it was a little sunny earlier. It started to cloud up and rain on and off. It'll be raining, I think, tonight here in southern New England. Temperatures in the 50s or maybe even the 40s. And I heard a dire report this morning from Chris Curtis of the Greg Hill Morning Show on WEEI. He's into weather, and he reported that it's possible that on Veterans Day Eve, which is next Tuesday, it may snow here. So hopefully he's wrong about that. Peter Alchul.
Okay, Peter's muted. Let me send him a prompt.
Okay, in the meantime, let me just say that as far as I know, Luther King will be late today, and Reverend Mike Garrett and Mitch Pomerantz will likely not be on the program. They are together, and they may pop in, but I don't know that for sure, so we'll have to wait and see on that. In the meantime...
Can you all hear me? Yes,
I can hear you, Peter.
Okay.
How's it going?
Sorry. I don't know what happened, but anyway, I'm here. Let's see. We'll have you back after a long wait. I think early next year, I should be able to be back more regularly. The weather here is typical Oregon weather in November, December, January, February, March, which is rain, wind, rawness, and disgusting weather. So we'll be having this for the entire week. And then we might get a day of sun, and then we'll get more rain. So this is Coos Bay weather in Oregon this time of year.
In the meantime, I've asked Bob Acosta to fill in a little bit today on our show. He's going to be one of our panel members because, frankly, we don't know who else is going to show up. So, Bob, if you're on, we welcome you today.
Well, thank you, Bob, and it's truly an honor to be here with these sports experts. It's 76 degrees in Southern California in the San Fernando Valley where I live. And it's just a great day. Just finished watching the Dodger parade, over 300,000 fans. And then they also sold tickets in Dodger Stadium and fill that stadium. So it's a very exciting day for all Dodger fans. Thank you.
There you go, Peter. You can sing and play drums. There you go.
That's for the Red Sox. That's not for the Dodgers. I don't know where that came from.
Anyway, I want to thank some people. I want to thank Raymond Gay for helping us produce our program. We appreciate that. Also, Peter from Canada. Thank you very much for posting our shows on your chat board. We appreciate that. Our media sources, thank you for airing us. And, of course, Jacqueline Sylvia for archiving our shows on my website. She's with JS Web Solutions. And the way you find our archives is to go to www.brancoevents.com. Arrow down until you get to Sports Roundtable Podcast. Click on that, and you will see most of our archives programs from latest to earliest. And as Peter affectionately says, merci, Jackie.
Merci, Jackie.
Well, there he is.
Good.
Okay. Anyway, I want to thank Trish for being our facilitator today. And, of course, for our streaming services, we thank Brad. So because we are being streamed live, let me give out my email address for those people who would like to write us. We'd like to hear what you have to say. So it's bobbranco93@gmail.com. bobbranco93@gmail.com. Congratulations, LA Dodgers. I'm sure Mitch is having a grand old time today, and I don't blame him. They are the first team to repeat in 25 years. Any thoughts on the World Series?
So Don, did you complain that I sang that song for the wrong team?
Yeah, that's what I was saying. That's for the Red Sox, not the Dodgers.
What song was that, by the way?
That was from Star Wars. It was the Evil Empire music.
Oh, okay.
That's what Peter was up to. But that was the first repeater since my Yankees did it in 1998 to 2000. That was the first National League repeater since the Reds of George Sparky Anderson in 1975 and 76. And what a fantastic, especially game 7, but there was a lot of fantastic to go around in this World Series.
Well, I thought that the 18-inning game, I kept saying, I love it, but I want to go to bed. But you guys in the East, it was 3 o'clock or something, was just tremendous. I said, this might be one of the greatest baseball games I ever witnessed.
Red Sox-Dodgers, 2018.
That's right. That's where it happened before. But this one, I must have... I went by that one, I guess. But anyway, it was just fantastic. And then we get to the 7th game. And the question I want to ask you guys is, they're all saying, well, Toronto's the best team. What constitutes the best team? I think the Dodgers were the best team. It's who wins in my book, but you may disagree. Thank you.
I never heard anything about the Toronto being labeled the best.
They're saying Toronto was the best team. Well,
I didn't expect the Blue Jays to take it as far as they did. When I found out that the Blue Jays were in the World Series, I predicted the Dodgers to win it probably in, I think I said 5 games. I certainly didn't think it was going to go 7. I only have one issue with Dave Roberts, though.
Oh.
And I know it didn't matter because the Dodgers won game 7, but I don't think he should have brought in Glasnow in relief in game 6. He should have kept Glasnow at his regular turn in the rotation and not try to risk Ohtani on little rest, especially where Ohtani is coming back from major surgery. And I understand it worked out, but he took a chance putting Glasnow into game 6 as a relief pitcher.
That's true enough, and Ohtani did poorly in game 7. The Dodgers had to mount a rally, or Ohtani would have been on the hook. He would have been known as the game 7 loser. So then Roberts would have heard it about using Glasnow in game 6.
But I don't know. And, you know, in game 6, you know, the Dodgers bullpen was terrible. I mean, you know, generally terrible. And so Roberts had to improvise. And I don't know what would have happened if he hadn't brought Glasnow in game 6. Would the Blue Jays have, you know, they might have won the series then and there, given the spotty, productivity of the Dodger bullpen.
That's why I think Dave should be manager of the year with that terrible bullpen.
He had Kershaw and Sasaki, 2 starters in his pen, ready to roll at any time. And they weren't used in the rotation, so they could have pitched any time.
Yeah.
Maybe.
He got lucky. He hit, you know, had he lost, they would have used that against him.
But that whole game 6 thing was bizarre in itself. You know,
that was wacky.
If things bounced slightly different way, the Blue Jays could have easily won. They didn't. Dodgers won the series, but you know, we all know, and you know, what should have happened. Although, as I understand it, the rules were if the ball gets trapped under the wall, it is a ground rule double. There's no arguing about that. But you know, it's just a weird bounce because if the ball hadn't been under the wall, maybe the Blue Jays would have scored one of those runs.
And if Pajes didn't make that great catch.
A great catch.
Game 7, the Blue Jays would have won that
game. Yeah. That was a tremendous catch he pulled off. And he really almost ran over one of the Hernandezes.
He almost ran
over Kike, yeah.
Yeah. They almost collided, absolutely.
Now the Dodgers have won it, and in a matter of days, the free agency period begins in baseball.
Before we go into free agency, we often talk about, you know, how baseball is different now than it was and how things were better back then. And maybe they were. But one of the things that struck me about this postseason in a new way is how different the regular season and the postseason are. And what I'm thinking about especially, there are 2 things. But the one thing is the way pitchers are used. And especially teams like the Dodgers, who – with their bullpen use starting pitchers all the time, you know, as relievers. And there were a couple of games during the playoffs when the bullpen pitching by committee happened, I think to great success. And that may not or may work in the regular season, but it seems to work pretty well in the postseason where, you know, it's a different world, right? It's like football for that matter, right? Where, you know, you got the preseason, I mean, you got the regular season and then the postseason, which is just a, which, I mean, it's the same rules, but it's played very differently. And of course, the major difference in between preseason, I mean, regular season and postseason is extra innings. You don't have that invisible man on second base, right? So that changes things for the better, I think. So anyway, I just, what struck me how different the postseason is to the regular season.
I've been noticing that about postseason pitching going all the way back to the 2016 World Series when the Cubs were taking on what was then the Indians. And there were a lot of very early exits by the starters as early as then. I think before that, things were pretty much, you know, standard procedure. They tried to get the starters to go as long as they could. And in fact, in 2015, Matt Harvey talked his way into continuing to pitch in the ninth inning, and he really was never the same after blowing that ninth inning lead that the Mets had.
Roberts got criticized for keeping, who was it in, was it game, was it, I can't remember what game it was, five or six, keeping that pitcher in a seventh inning, and he got roughed up. I guess it was game
five, and
it was Snell, and six was Yamamoto.
Right.
It was five when the Dodgers lost 6-1.
Yes, he did get some heat for that.
He got a lot of heat for keeping the pitcher in. And, you know, we always talk about how pitchers are kept in too short and are, well, this is one of those times when it appears that the reverse was true. He should have taken him out in the sixth inning. But again, you know, I'm not the manager. So
if he could trust his bullpen, he would have done that.
That's right.
He couldn't trust his conventional bullpen. He could trust his starters who were now relief pitchers, although not Emmett Sheehan, not entirely, but he had Sasaki and he had Kershaw, you know, both of whom, you know, got
in. Roblinski did pretty well too. Well,
him too, yes. I shouldn't forget about him. Justin Roblinski.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
But Kershaw, I think, I mean, my guess, and I don't, you know, is that Kershaw is essentially done. He's retiring.
Right? I heard he is.
Yes, he's calling it a career. And
game three. I wonder how much he had left. I mean,
game three was his sayonara.
Yeah. Well, he won the World Series, so good for them. But just one other comment. The reason I think that they're the Dodgers of the evil empire is because they spend way more money than anybody else. And, you know, it's the way the Yankees were back in the 70s. A lot of people criticized the Yankees for buying them World Series. And, you know, George Steinbrenner and Billy Martin, that whole gang. And I think the Dodgers are the 2025 version of the 1970s Yankees.
I agree.
And now we have Mark Walters as the owner, the new owner of the Dodgers. So
there you go.
I think they're
the new Darth Vader March. That's where they belong. That's my opinion.
One thing they have that especially the modern Yankees don't is Dave Roberts is a brilliant tactician, where our manager, Aaron Boone, is a ham-fisted bumbler.
So, Don, I've been wanting to talk to you about this since the end of the baseball season. I just find the whole Boone thing fascinating because every year we have this conversation that Boone should be fired, and every year the Yankees keep him. And every year, Boone seems to be just good enough to keep his job. I mean, you know, the Yankees made the ALDS or whatever it is. They made the second round and beat the Red Sox. And let's face it, the Blue Jays had a better team than the Yankees, you know. And so a part of me is like, they should have got rid of him 5 years ago. But, you know, I think the blame for the Yankees is less to Boone than Cashman, who just won't spend the money that needs to be spent to get, you know, decent players.
And really, it's both of them. Last year, Boone got totally outmanaged by Roberts, and frankly, Debbie Boone could have done a better job than Aaron Boone in that
you
World Series.
Light up my love.
Exactly.
Well, as I was saying, free agency begins shortly. I think, 5 days after the last game of the World Series is when that opens up, I believe.
Forget Alex Bregman in Boston. He's going to move. That's one thing I got, along with extra innings. Eddie Diaz is going from the Mets. They're both opting out of their contracts looking for greener pastures.
I hear there are 4 teams interested in Bregman, including Detroit, which would be a perfect fit for him, by the way. I would hate to see Bregman go.
Right.
But Detroit, I think, would love to have Bregman play third base over there.
Oh, we could stand a third baseman.
You don't like McMahon, Don?
He's not a permanent third baseman. He's a good stopgap, but, you know, Bregman would be a lot better full-time, long-term than McMahon. And he's more of a hitter than McMahon will ever be.
The interesting one for me is going to be Pete Alonso. I heard that he wants out of the Mets because the Mets spent a lot of money for nothing. I mean, I'm paraphrasing. I don't know exactly how he feels, but I think I know what the attitude is. I had heard that somewhere, that he's discouraged because the Mets did make an effort. They spent tons and tons of money. Yeah. They had a $340-something million payroll this year, and they went down the toilet in the second half.
Yeah.
I can't blame him wanting to get out of there. I mean, can you imagine Pete Alonso at Great American Ballpark in Cincinnati?
Oh, my.
I can imagine him at Fenway. That's where I imagine him.
Is he a right-handed hitter? I don't even know.
I think Pete Alonso is right-handed.
That would be nice. He'd bounce a lot of balls off of that wall.
He sure would.
But that would be troublesome for my Yankees, though. So not the Red Sox, not the Astros.
So turning to football, I am amazed, and I'm not just saying this because the Patriots are my team. I've rooted for the Patriots for over 50 years. But, man, have they shocked a lot of people. They've won 6 in a row.
Yes.
They are 7-2, and they're flirting with the number one seed.
I think a lot of people thought the Patriots were going to be better. I thought they'd be second place in the AFC East. But they have played really, really well. I think they have a tougher part of their schedule toward the end of the season, but nonetheless.
They have Tampa Sunday. That's the first tough team they've had in Oklahoma. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'll be a tough one for them, but I think at Kemba Willis they have, but they play Buffalo again, of course. They beat Buffalo once already in Buffalo.
Now, they have the Jets twice. They have Buffalo. They have Miami. They have the Giants, Tampa, and I want to say Baltimore.
I think you're right about Baltimore. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, that's not as tough as I thought it was. I mean, they're going to beat the Jets twice. The Jets are pathetic. Miami's pathetic. The Giants are pathetic. Baltimore.
Coming back a little bit.
Baltimore may yet get their act together, and I still can't believe Pittsburgh's going to win that AFC North. They played well yesterday against Indy, but I'm a bit leery about Pittsburgh. Well, any team that's Aaron Rodgers on the team, I'm leery about, but he's playing pretty well now. I've made fun of Aaron Rodgers since he joined the Jets.
And they play Chargers Sunday night, next Sunday, Pittsburgh. So
that'll be interesting.
How about Kansas City? If the season ended today, they'd be out of the playoffs, I understand. Golly.
Kansas City, they have trouble. They still play Denver twice.
Oh my gosh.
And that'll be interesting. And I think they have to play Indianapolis too. Kansas City is in trouble. I don't know. We'll see what happens to them. And Baltimore, of course, is also in trouble. They sort of have to win the division, I think, if they're going to make the playoffs, but we'll have to wait and see, I guess. But, you know, I'm always glad to see the Jets. Oh, how about those Bengals and their vaunted defense?
That was shocking. You know, my brother-in-law is a humongous Jets fan, and he bailed out when it was like 17-3, Cincinnati was ahead. And of course, later he would find out to his sorrow that he shouldn't have bailed out, because that's the game the Jets came back and won. And so if they're 1-15, that'll be their one.
1-16, Dodd.
16?
It's a 17-game season
now. Oh, geez.
I don't know if anybody watched that Cincinnati Chicago game yesterday.
That was a great game.
Well, the Bears are up by 2 touchdowns. The Bengals come back, onside kick, get the lead by a point. And then, you know, all they have to do is stop the Bears the last time, and they couldn't do it. They couldn't do it. It was like a 50-yard touchdown.
It's getting better.
And Cincinnati lost again.
That's the kind of game I wish there was on demand for radio football like there is for radio baseball.
Yeah.
Well, if you get satellite radio, ESPN radio, you can get all the games.
ESPN Radio does a fabulous job broadcasting. They really, really do.
They do. They're very good. I don't listen to their football games because I can get them elsewhere, but they're very good.
I'm a Kevin and Kurt fan. Kevin Harlan and Kurt.
Well, Kevin is Westwood One.
Right on.
Yeah. Yes.
They're terrific. He's terrific.
And they're good. Yeah. No doubt about it.
Very good.
But ESPN Radio is really good when it comes to college football, when it comes to baseball, and when it comes to basketball. But they're not doing baseball next year.
Yeah, you can forget about that. And you know, the World Series, Bob Branco brought up an item. I don't know how many of us saw that, and I don't know how many of us listened to the end of the game on ESPN Radio as Bob did and as I did. And we both noticed that the ESPN announcers were markedly unenthusiastic when the Dodgers won the World Series and the game was over.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it's funny. I listened to that game too at that time, and I just didn't pick up on it. I believe the two of you. I'm not saying you're wrong. I just didn't pick up on it.
Somebody that I know has an interesting theory, guys. He believes that it's because the Dodgers, well, like Peter said, the Dodgers are sort of like the Yankees of the 70s. And when the team continues to do it over and over again, there seems to be less enthusiasm by some of the announcers. Oh, here we go again. They won again. In fact, the Patriots is a good example.
Oh, yes.
After a while, when they win the Super Bowl, it's like, oh, the Patriots won the Super Bowl again, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have another theory too, which is I think a lot of folks on ESPN and ESPN and ESPN Radio are starting to see baseball go. And I think communicated itself by accident on the air. You know, they know that they're not broadcasting baseball anymore. And, so that may have leaked out that sort of sadness.
And we'll miss Jessica Mendoza.
Oh, she's fabulous.
Oh, isn't she something?
Yeah, she's wonderful.
I mean, I've been saying good things about her back when everybody else was saying how awful she was.
I thought she was wonderful.
No, she's good. She's a good sideline reporter.
Yeah,
excellent.
She's rock solid.
Yeah, no, she's great. Speaking of female reporters, I listened to Susan Waldman and Dave Sims a couple of times this year, and I found them so boring. Just boring.
Oh, they're worse than that. They got a big problem there. The rapport is not there.
Yeah.
They're, even after a full season, they're still stepping all over each other, which two consummate professionals should not do. Yeah, my old partner and I, we worked together 12 years, and if there was one thing guaranteed to get him uptight, it would be, you know, me stepping on him, especially if I stepped on a punchline, if he had a rare punchline. But that would get him going real quick. And these are, as I say, two people who should know better and should be able to perform better and should off air, you know, get into meetings. How are we going to do if such and such happens? How are we going to do if this and that happens? And Jim and I used to have meetings of that kind all the time. That's what, you know, you get together for pizza and beer and you discuss these things.
Over to join the meeting.
Well, I don't like the Yankee announcer. And why John Sterling, he had his moments when I remember Susan would make a long statement, hey, and he'd go ball three. But then he got a little better. He started relating to her. But I liked him over this Yankee guy now. I don't know.
Was a wonderful sports talk show host in New York City in the 70s and 80s and 90s. And did football in Westwood One, I think it was wonderful.
Yes, he did.
And I think I'm afraid he's just getting older. And just has lost his mojo or something. Cause I love Dave Sims and Susan Waldman, the same thing. When she came on WFAN in the late 80s, 90s and early 2000s, she was wonderful.
Oh, yes.
But it seemed that John Sterling ignored Susan for a long, like he'd say ball three, he should make, but then he got better the last couple of years. It seemed to me anyway.
Well, Dave Sims, remember more often than not, he was doing TV before he moved back to.
Hi, Luther.
Okay. So,
you know, Bob, you mentioned about John Sterling. One of the things I've always enjoyed about him was he made up these home run calls. He was so fun with that. He really, really was.
I mean, I think that's becoming a lost art in broadcasting. I think, in my opinion, that a lot of guys don't have a home run call. If there is one, they're very rare.
Mm-hmm. But some of the stuff he did, like especially for Giancarlo Stanton, let's remember, folks, this guy came into the league as Mike Stanton.
I remember
what the Giancarlo deal was, and Sterling got into this Italian stuff and just drove me up a wall.
I think, now that I could be wrong, I think I heard that Giancarlo, it was, I think, a family thing. I think I could be wrong, but I think that's why he switched it from Mike to Giancarlo.
And when was he Mike? When was he Mike Stanton?
When he
first came up with the Marlins.
Correct. In fact, I think I have his major league debut in my vault.
Wasn't it like 2000 or 2001 when he came up?
Maybe no, later? More like 2010 to 2012.
I see around 2011, 2010.
But he was special then, because I think Dontrell was getting close to the end, or he may have been, you know, he was in his prime or vice versa, because I know the Marlins are always, the Masters are stripping it down and trying to rebuild it back up.
I don't know. I remember after 97 when they won it all. That's just what they did.
And then they did it again after 03.
One thing I did find out though, I Googled and said, what does John Sterling say on Giancarlo Stanton's home runs call? And it is real. It's not like made up Italian. It's something
I can't pronounce
like,
it. I don't even know what the English translation
is. In English, it roughly translates into, he cannot be stopped. It's something like that.
Oh my gosh.
I don't have the exact of either English or the Italian, but I did want to know if it was real or just, you know, pretend Italian.
Mm-hmm. I believe it was Giancarlo non si può stopparlo. I believe that's what it was.
And that means something like, he cannot be stopped.
In Fuego, he can't be stopped or something?
Yeah.
Something like that.
But some of that stuff was so, I mean, it's nothing like Dave Niehaus with,
oh, you know, Lord.
Get out the right
Let me tell you.
Oh, he was.
That was one of those. Let me put it this way. All you had to do was go on YouTube. And you would find.
Oh, we got Whitney Houston over there? No, she's going to be on the show? That's interesting. Oh.
Bonus.
I thought it was Mariah Carey.
Either way, bonus. But like I said, all you got to do is go on YouTube, type in Dave Niehaus, and they had his top 10 or top 15 of his most memorable calls, because he was the voice of the... Oh yeah, it's up. All you gotta do is go on your Google and type in, you know, Dave Niehaus, you know, his Dave Niehaus radio calls or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it's got him up there. Dave Niehaus and Rick Riz. And it was basically from his inception with the Mariners before he passed.
When they began, he went from the Angels to the Mariners when they first began in 77.
Yep. And then. He had Rick Riz for a long time on both radio and TV.
And now Rick Riz. Radio.
And Rick Riz is still there with the radio with Gary Hill. And I like the fact that they had Aunt Gary Hill and Neesmith. Yeah, Goldsmith on Mariners playoff radio. Three play-by-play guys.
All good stuff, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And Shannon Dreyer on the free post. She's
free post, down on the field. I'm surprised they didn't have Mike Blowers from TV to, like the Giants would do with Kruko. Cause the Giants would have Kruko with Miller, Fleming, Kuiper.
Blowers.
They would rotate. He'd
play for the Mariners if I'm thinking of the same guy.
That's it. Yeah,
Mike Blowers, yeah. Like I said, I'm surprised they didn't use him as either him or Jay Buhner for coming on radio since they didn't. Yeah. I'm surprised they didn't. They used all three play voices.
They would work in Buhner during the regular season, but not the postseason.
That's what I mean. I'm surprised they didn't do what the other broadcast teams would have done and had their, you know, color analysts on TV be the analysts on radio side and just rotate.
They didn't use the Australian either, Ryan Roland Smith.
No, they didn't. I was surprised by that.
So the trade deadline's approaching this week in the NFL.
And tomorrow.
I'm wondering if you guys think there are going to be any big names being sent somewhere else.
Rams need a kicker. I know that. Hardy.
Josh Hardy.
Josh is not making it.
He's kind of tailed off. He really has.
He was good at the beginning. Yes.
I think Matt Ucetic, who the Green Bay Packers used while Brandon McManus was healing, he's probably going to be on the trade block somewhere.
Who was that kicker for the Jacksonville Jaguars? Never heard of him before.
He was the Arkansas Razorback place kicker. His name was Cam Little. He kicked at the University of Arkansas and he made a 68-yard bomb. I remember him in college at Arkansas when he was the place kicker. They had him kick long, but I don't think they had him kick that long.
Well, apparently the Eagles got a pretty good,
they actually got Jalen Alexander and then they got two corners yesterday, actually Jalen Alexander and Jordan Phillips basically on the same day, in fact. And all they did was trade draft picks. They swapped picks.
I don't know I wanted to mention, since I now live in Oregon, you know, we follow Seattle.
Yeah.
Teams.
The Seahawks.
Seahawks were playing very well.
Yes, they are. Very well.
They clobbered the Commanders yesterday.
They not only clobbered the Commanders, they crushed them like a grape. The game wasn't even close.
It wasn't close.
And then Dan Quinn kept Jaden Daniels in the ball game. I'm like, why did you keep him in to get his elbow dislocated again?
Yeah.
His second injury in like what? 2 weeks?
What's wrong with the Commanders? What, from last year? They were quite exciting. Jaden got hurt.
The Commanders got old and slow real fast. Because let me tell you, in the NFL, you can have one or two good years, but by year 3, 4, 5 with all those car crashes you take, you go from fast to dog years slow like that.
Boy.
And it doesn't take long. And the Commanders are finding out the hard way that, yeah, you can have the same team, but if you don't find speed, you're going to get exposed really quick.
Well, by the way, the Seahawks are in first place.
The round robin with the Rams, 49ers, and Seahawks is going to be very fun to watch down the stretch.
The Rams and 49ers.
The round robin.
Because I think Rams have one more with the 49ers. I think the 49ers have two more with the Seahawks. They could possibly go perfect in the division and win it and I think they got one more with the Cardinals. So the 49ers could possibly put themselves in a very good.
The Cardinals are not very good.
The Cardinals are bad.
They lost Murray again.
They are bad.
You know what? I'm almost wondering at this point if they should just go ahead, trade Kyler Murray somewhere, get capital, fire Jonathan Gannon, and just start this whole thing over again. Because that's what it feels like. It feels like the Cardinals, they're in the desert, but they feel like they're like Moses in the wilderness. They can't get out of their own way.
Luther, I keep saying trade Murray to the Jets because the Jets are stupid.
Pete, if you think Kyler Murray couldn't figure it out with the desert birds, what makes you think he can figure it out with Woodie Johnson and his dysfunctional dysfunctional Jefferson Starship or the group that had
My problem is with
Peter Paul and Mary.
The Jets' complete incompetence
The Jets haven't been good since at least they made the AFC Championship game with Mark Buttfumble / Icy Ghost Sanchez, and that was 16 years ago.
Did we all see what happened to Sanchez, by the way?
I remember seeing a video about like him being caught up in like
he apparently got out of
Get out? Oh my goodness!
No. I'm trying to remember the story. He got out and this trucker got it was deaf and couldn't hear him and got in his face and Sanchez beat him up and the trucker stabbed him. And last I heard, Sanchez was in the hospital. The trucker has been charged with assault last
time. Just recently?
Yes.
Yeah, it was about a month and a half, 2 months ago.
Wasn't he, Sanchez?
Was drunk. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I haven't heard any more since then.
I haven't either, but it's
I haven't either.
Story.
Yeah, it was, I'm like, whoa, doesn't wait, what? Cause I woke up, I'm like, wait, what? Mark Sanchez did what?
Yeah.
And then I saw iHeart Sports Daily when they dropped the story and I'm like, what happened here? I'm like, that's messed up.
One of those things. And I think the problem was that part of the problem was the trucker, he wasn't deaf, but he was in a loud space and
he couldn't hear him.
His heart couldn't hear. And so,
yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. Sanchez, so the truck bends down to hear him and Sanchez didn't like being crowded and punched him out. You know, this is not good football etiquette, shall we say?
No, it was definitely not for me. It was definitely not that.
So anyway, so the Mariners are playing really well. I wonder, and the Seahawks played very well. They could have beaten the Blue Jays. They didn't, of course.
The Mariners, they came on at the last minute. Houston had that division.
And then Houston basically did one of their.
They folded.
They did the Mets routine. Yeah.
And the Mets. Oh God almighty. The Mets. I'm like, I just don't know what to say about them.
I'm impressed with the Mariners starting pitching. They have some of the best starting pitching in the American League.
But Don, remember you and I talked about this with a lot of teams that are built for success right now. But I think you asked me the question in text and you and I were kind of talking about it. It's like, how long can they keep this, you know, pitching staff and team together before they have to trade it? Before they have to trade some of these guys.
Gilbert, you've got Kirby. Yeah. Wu is emerging, although he was hurt in the playoffs, but still. Yeah,
that's like Paul Skeen. How long are the Pirates?
That's my point.
Where it's Pittsburgh, Bob, you know, that speaks for itself.
Here's the thing. Pittsburgh always seems like they do well in certain spots, but then when it comes down to it, we find out they still have cracks in the armor where they cannot seem to overcome their own stupidity. And they reach and they overpay for players that they shouldn't overpay for, but they do. As we've seen with the Pirates.
Well, are you surprised they took McCutchen back?
I'm kind of not because he was one of their homegrowns. So I was not surprised they, you know, took him back to try to, you know, give him one last run with the Pirates. So no, I wasn't surprised at basically the value that they basically at a hometown discount that he signed for. No. I'm not surprised.
Into our participant portion of the program, I just have another comment to make on the free agency. Somebody brought to my attention, and I did not hear this officially, is Detroit having a problem re-signing Scooble? What's going on with that?
Yeah. I have not heard anything of that, but the thing is, when you pitched as well as he has, guess what? The price is going to go up, as they talk about in the NFL. The longer you wait, the more tougher it is, that price tag is going to be to sign. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Luther.
But something tells me that they will figure out a happy medium with the Tigers and Scooble on a long-term deal, or he will go in free agency and he will go to the highest bidder.
A very high bidder.
I just want to make a quick comment before we go to I hope all of us realize that after next baseball season, we may not have another baseball season.
We have a strike.
You know what?
I think there's going to be a strike, and I don't know what's going
to
happen.
And that's why a lot of players are going to be reluctant to sign the long-term deal.
Mm-hmm. That may be true.
I would say like, oh, you know, the team may want to say, okay, here's 5 years for such and such, but the agent and player may say, hey, give me, you know, instead of five, give me three. With more money and more more guaranteed money at the back end of year two and three and an opt out, you know, maybe after year two.
Before we have participants, can someone tell me about this Riley, where he came from, the catcher from the Mariners?
The Mariners?
Kyle Riley?
Thank you. I've never heard of him before.
Here's the thing.
Mariners, he's been there for about 3 or 4 years, I think, but this year he had a real breakout.
I remember hearing about him in the Seattle system, I believe, when he got either drafted by Seattle or he got traded there And that's he was in one of the other team. He was in one of the other team's minor league systems. I think he was either at double A or triple A Tacoma.
Wow.
Well, he was a draftee. Caleb John Raleigh, like yeah. The city of North Carolina. Raleigh.
Oh yeah, he was a Tar Heel. I forgot. I think if I'm not mistaken, he was on the last, well, one of the last College World Series teams that the Tar Heels made. I think he was after Jacob Stallings, I think.
Good afternoon, folks.
Hey,
Mitch.
We just got back.
Fantastic day.
Man, Mitch, well, let me tell you.
We had a great day, went down for Cajun food. Down about 30 miles from here. We just got back.
Food fit for a back-to-back world champion. Thank you, Yoji. Thank you, Yokobi Yamamoto. Three for three.
Absolutely. That was, you know, I had concerns after losing 2 out of 3 at home, man, but they came through.
Mitch, yep. Is it me or does Kome Yoji Yamamoto have a bionic arm? He just feels like no matter what they ask of him, he's like, okay, coach.
What he did was what pitchers did routinely in the 50s and 60s.
And 70s and 80s and 90s. And thank you, Jack Morris, for 1991.
And if you remember, Mitch, you would remember better probably than a lot because you live out there. But last year, 2024, the very beginning of Yamamoto, could you imagine that Yamamoto ever being on the World Series stage and shining the way he shined?
Look, let me see. Game two.
Go ahead, Mitch.
The reason he signed with the Dodgers was because of Ohtani. He wasn't sure, and we were concerned for a while that he didn't want to be second fiddle behind Ohtani. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he came over, and then we got Sasaki. So, you know, we've got the three top Japanese pitchers pitching for us. But he did an amazing job, and he deserves series MVP. Because the Dodgers wouldn't have won without him, and the reality is that the Dodgers didn't play that well.
No, they did. They did. Look, the whole series after they got the split and won game three, it just felt like they just ran out of gas. And I'm like, there is no way they can come back and win the next two in Toronto.
You don't look at the hitting statistics because they out hit us.
Oh yeah, indeed they did.
Oh, a ton.
Yeah. So.
And how many
opportunities made all the big defensive plays? I mean, that really is the bottom line.
And how many
offensive plays? That's what, yeah, among other things, we gave it to them.
And guys, how many opportunities? Cause I'm just sitting there listening to games 6 and 7. I'm thinking, how many opportunities can Toronto keep being given and not cash in on them?
Exactly.
I'm thinking, like, there is no way they can keep blowing these and think they're going to win this thing.
Yeah.
But a lot of those things happen because of really outstanding defensive plays. It's not that the Blue Jays hitting was terrible in those spots. It was mostly, if you think about it, a lot of those.
They weren't hitting in the clutch.
No, they weren't.
They weren't. But some of those were Dodgers defensive plays, too.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't that the balls weren't hit hard. They were hit to the wrong spot.
And especially that.
Let's see if we can go ahead.
Hayes.
Well, I was just going to say the ball that Andy Pajas caught.
No kidding.
That would have scored 2-3 runs.
And that would have ended
the game. In the series.
Yeah.
That would have ended it.
So anyway,
I think that was in the bottom of the ninth, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Yes, no, it was.
Eighth. Eighth. Yeah, it was the eighth.
So let's see if we have anybody else that would like to talk to us. You're listening to Sports Roundtable, so let me see if there are any hands raised. Trish, do we have anybody waiting at the moment? Trish?
Well, while we're waiting.
Hi, Michael.
I'm celebrating. Hi, guys.
How are you?
I'm celebrating, too. Like Miss said, I'm full of Cajun food, but I'm celebrating too because my Longhorns won a game that I thought
They were not going to win.
Yes, they did.
And Kesty broadcast the game on ESPN.
He was our
play-by-play on ESPN.
Wait a minute. You mean to tell me you didn't listen to your boy Craig Way? I had both these.
No, I was in St. Louis.
Oh, okay. Makes sense.
Oh, that's right. I was in St. Louis.
But
it was a game we had to hold on to win, but it was a game I didn't think we would score that many points.
The first play of the game, I was listening to the game.
Yeah, 75 yard.
And I don't know how many times, and I mean, I was trying to count it in my head, right? At least 6 to 7, maybe 8 times, maybe more, they sent the blitz. They picked it up, and I'm like, if they don't stop sending that blitz, Vandy is going to get torched. And I'll be doggone. They kept sending the blitz, and then when they finally stopped sending it, that actually looked better. But by then, it was too late. And by the way, Hughes at Auburn just got fired today. That's now 11 college football openings, by the way, and more to come.
So, Michael, what are your thoughts about the SEC? I mean, we have Texas A&M, Alabama, Mississippi,
Georgia
are all top 10.
The SEC is top, Pete. The SEC is top.
I think the three.
Can I just jump in here real quick?
Go ahead.
Go.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay, I apologize. Zoom muted me and I didn't even realize it. And Bob, there were no hands. There are still no hands, but I'm sorry. I didn't even realize I was muted. So go ahead.
That's
continue.
Okay. Let us know when that changes.
I will.
So Peter, I think the three top teams by strength, just by the way they play right now, are Georgia, Alabama, and Texas A&M.
And I think we'll see
how it all plays out.
I wouldn't rule out Texas, Oklahoma, and Mississippi either. I think they're all solid teams.
Oklahoma's got two losses. They're going to have to get a lot of help.
They do.
Ole Miss might be the fly in the ointment, but their schedule's not easy either. And Texas, they've already lost a couple of games. They can't lose anymore because if they lose one,
they've only lost one conference game.
Yeah, one conference, but
Oklahoma's lost two.
Oklahoma's lost two.
Tennessee's
already gone. Tennessee's lost three. They're done.
LSU.
I'll put in a word for USC. We beat Nebraska thanks to the their quarterback spraining his ankle in the in the middle of the third quarter. Otherwise,
Dylan Raiola. Dylan Raiola. Yeah. Yeah.
We actually won a Big Ten road game.
Yep. I don't know. Because right now, I think the collision course is Ohio State, Indiana for the Big Ten championship game. Unless one of those two are going to have to lose twice for USC to sneak in there. I think USC's like third or fourth right now on the pecking order.
Well, I got Oregon, don't forget.
But we never beat Oregon up in Eugene.
Look at what Indiana did though this year. They went down there and won.
That was impressive.
And normally that don't happen.
Austin Stadium is one of the toughest places. It's intimate.
And it's loud.
It's loud. And yes. There's nothing else to do in Eugene but root for the Ducks.
It almost has a Lumen Field Seattle Seahawks type of effect because there's no other place for the sound to go.
Yeah. Yeah, no, we've not had good luck in all the years we've gone up to Eugene. I think we won once in my memory.
Oh, well, that was probably like, what, 1980?
I think Oregon's a solid team, too. They lost Indiana at home. And so that's a major downside for them. But they're a pretty good team.
But here's the thing, though. As long as they keep winning and if that's their only loss, they're going to get to another big-time bowl game. But is it going to be enough for them to get into the college football playoff? Because there's going to be a lot of teams. Mm-hmm. With one loss, and it also depends on where that loss happened and did they win out after they lost. So, you know, that's going to be very interesting to see how the committee will look at it down the stretch.
I thought the ACC would be better this year than they were last year.
Man,
Florida State's does not at
Florida State's falling flat on their face after the Virginia loss.
Yep.
Miami basically fell flat on their face. They have two losses now, Louisville and SMU.
Yeah.
So Georgia Tech finally took a loss.
Yeah, that was the surprise. I thought the Georgia Tech's Georgia game was going to be a highlight game.
But well, here's the thing. But the thing is, I didn't think NC State would go down to the flats and do that. That might be one of those losses that Georgia Tech looks back on that if they don't make the CFP, that is going to be one of those where it's like, how did we lose that game? And you know the committee's going to look at that and in its whole totality on how that goes.
And don't forget Belichick in North Carolina.
I was going to say, is the 12th firing of a coach this year going to be Belichick?
I think 12 and 13 is going to be North Carolina. Look, I think it's going to be, Belichick, it's not going to be Belichick getting fired. He's going to leave for an NFL job. And I think Mark Stoops,
hire Belichick?
Hold on though. Think about it. If a team is desperate enough, they will. And look, I don't know who it's going to be, but if there is a team that is desperate enough and being sick and tired of being where they are, they're going to be running.
There's only one way Belichick will come back to the NFL. And that's if he can lure Tom Brady out of retirement. Bob and I had this conversation. Bob and I had this discussion offline. I think Bill Belichick's most overrated coach in NFL history.
And by the way, I know you forgot another coach could be fired at the end of the season too. Mark Stoops at Kentucky.
Yeah.
You know, Mitch,
I don't see how Mark Stoops has survived as long as he has.
Mitch, I've always said that Brady was much more responsible for the Patriots dynasty than Bill Belichick ever was. And the only way to prove that is to look at Bill Belichick's record.
After Brady, on teams without Brady.
And what Brady did at Tampa Bay.
And people are saying, Belichick is the greatest coach of all time. I don't think so.
No.
Let me see.
I think there are two teams that Belichick might go to. Maybe. One is the New York Jets because they're the Jets. And one is the Dallas Cowboys because it's the Cowboys.
Let me put it this way. Hold on, Michael. I'm sure you've got something to say about that.
I'm already disqualifying that one. Yeah, talk about oil and a match.
It should be fun, though. That wouldn't work.
Let me put it this way, because Mike Florio talked about this, because he's like, because they kept putting the story out that maybe there's a possibility Belichick goes to the Cowboys. Like, the blank, why would Jerry Jones want to work with Bill Belichick? Because those two are like water and gasoline. They ain't going to work. And by the way, why would Belichick want to go to Woodrow Johnson, who can't even fix his own franchise? I can't see anybody hiring Belichick for anything
in the NFL. He's worn out his welcome. And I think Bob is right and Mitch is right. He's overrated as a head coach.
Well, here's the thing. What's the adage before Brady, after Brady, night and day difference?
I think that's right. Yeah, I think Belichick eventually will leave North Carolina, but the NFL is not going to want to bring him back.
It would have to be a team that is, you know, feeling like that they're close and they have everything in place and all they need is another head coach.
The Bengals.
That would be like LSU hiring Nick Saban again.
Actually, Mike, I'm glad you brought that up because the mouth of the South, Paul Feinbaum, Friday, maybe earlier last week, said something about that there could be a possibility if he's willing to, talk to LSU about coming back, there's a possibility. But I'm thinking, what if Michigan State fires Jonathan Smith and they want to bring back one of their native sons? Would Nick Saban go back to Michigan State in East Lansing?
Nick Saban has already said
he will never coach college again because he hates the transfer portal and NIL.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, here's the thing.
I was being a little facetious, but it's the same kind of relationship that Belichick has with football these days.
Let me put it this way.
The thing, Mitch, I know he said that. And I know he seemed sincere when he said that, but money costs and opportunities have opening up.
Peter,
and,
I would go to Vegas tomorrow. If I could find a betting line and put money down, I do a two-guy parlay. The two coaches that'll never coach in the NFL, Saban will never coach
in college
football again, and Belichick will never coach in the pros.
Well, Belichick, I agree with you. I'm not so sure about Saban.
But as Ted DiBiase from way back in WWF days, the Million Dollar Man always says, everybody's got a price. And
Belichick's price is he'd want to be general manager.
But
he
wasn't
a very good general manager.
No,
especially with drafts.
Well, you know something? Wouldn't it be something if Stephen Ross asked Belichick to just be coach and he finds a general manager and, you know, they had to work together? Knowing Stephen Ross like we do, being the idiot sick and cuss that he is, something tells me that if he were desperate enough to try to turn his fortunes around with the fishies, he would. Stephen Ross would be desperate enough to do that.
No, but we're talking about two guys well into their 70s.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm just not sure that they can relate to the younger guys.
No,
that's the problem
in
right Carolina
that, yeah.
with Belichick right now. Exactly.
And here's the thing, though. Look, all these younger coaches have passed these guys by. I mean, Joe Paterno, before he got fired, everybody thought that the game had passed him by. I mean, I really don't know. You know, it just.
Well, in the case of Belichick, I haven't totally given up.
We have 1 minute, folks. 1 minute.
He did beat Syracuse last week. Syracuse is ACC team.
And
I haven't quite given up on him yet.
Here's the thing. Syracuse lost their quarterback too. Steve Angeli, who went down, I think, like last week or 2 weeks ago, and they used a couple of freshmen as quarterbacks.
Well, okay, I stand corrected.
But, Syracuse kind of didn't have, you know, their quarterback, their trigger puller to do what they needed to do. So.
Well, we'll see.
It's only
his first season. It's been awful.
We are out of time, gentlemen, but I want to thank everybody for another great edition of Sports Roundtable. Thanks, everybody, and also to Brad and Trish and Bob for filling in on the panel early in the show. We appreciate all of that. We appreciate all of you. So go safe with God's abundant blessings, and talk next Monday. Take care.